It's now time for a very royal flush edition of Game Pass or Pass, the podcast where we play games on Microsoft's Game Pass service to tell you which games to pass into a friend, which games to just discard into your discard pile and just pass on by. I'm Corey. I'm joined by the man who somehow got 7 jokers at one point, I heard. Basher.
Wait, can you not get 7 jokers?
No, you can only get 5.
But you can expand the thing. Good day, sirs. I am currently cheating in Balatro, apparently.
Are you cheating? What does that mean?
I don't know.
What does that mean? Tell me the ways. I must know. Is there a trainer? Is this like Diablo style? Is there a secret that I don't know about? We're here to talk about Balatro, the poker-inspired roguelike deck builder, all about creating powerful synergies and winning big. There's a chance you might have heard about this game as it was on the game of the year candidate. And like Vampire Survivors, it's like, what, $10 or something like that? Even less, I think it was like $5. But it recently made its way to Xbox Game Pass, and so we figured we'd talk about it. Chances are you've either already played it, but if you haven't for some reason, this is an opportunity. But also, we're going to share our thoughts on it because it's a run-based game, which means that we have to talk about it. That is becoming the rule on this show. But did you know that you can let us know what you think about Balatro? Or maybe any other game. We were just talking about Final Fantasy 13 for some reason. I don't.
Right? Who's still talking about
it's
that game?
It's a game that it just comes up every now and then, and it's like a case study game. So if you want to let us know what you think about Final Fantasy, 574-651-9256. Here are the details for Balatro. Balatro is a poker-inspired roguelike deck builder all about creating powerful synergies and winning big. The poker roguelike Balatro is a hypnotically satisfying deck builder where you play illegal poker hands, discover game-changing jokers, and trigger adrenaline-pumping, outrageous combos. Combine valid poker hands with unique card jokers in order to create varied synergies and builds. Earn enough chips to beat devious blinds, all while uncovering hidden bonus hands and decks as you progress. Going to need every edge you can get in order to reach the boss blind, beat the final ante, and secure victory. It's available on PC, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X and S. It does have cloud save, so your progress does go from version to version. Regularly priced at $14.99. We've got a how long to beat of 7 hours, main and extras of 40, and a completionist of 212 hours. Balatro. Let's talk about it.
Let's talk about Balatro. I actually first played this game because you did not want to record this because you thought I was cheating.
Yeah.
Because I played this game first before it came out on Game Pass.
I did too.
My friend Snap said to play this quite a while ago. I was like, what is he? He's like, it's a runner and it's a card game. I'm like, I'm in. Like,
it's a wall in this show.
That's all I need at this point. It is a poker game. It's not a wild poker game. It starts off as a poker game, and then you soon discover the power of the jokers. And once you start getting those jokers, it stops becoming a poker game, and it starts becoming its own kind of phenom, I think.
Yeah, and it's. So the reason I said it'd be cheating is because it was a Game of the Year nominee. It had come out a while ago. This wasn't like when Vampire Survivors hit. That kind of hit all around the same time kind of thing. And I had played this a little bit. This is actually on Apple Arcade as well. It's been on Apple Arcade for a while. And I'm one of those weird people that has a iPad and actually uses it to game every now and then. So I was just like, we know it's good kind of thing. And so that might give you a little bit of a hint. This is a good game. However, I've got my problems with it, but I still enjoyed it. But we're just going to talk about it. Why not? We've played it probably way too much. Right now, it's my go-to. I just need to turn off the world, put on a podcast. So I'm going to go to my desk and use the standing mode because I paid for it. Got to use it and play some Balatro and listen to a podcast kind of thing. So, but as you said, it keeps going. And you keep getting new things, and you keep discovering new things, and then all of a sudden, it's 5 hours later sort of thing. So, Balatro. So, while it does it's on poker hands. You know, it's about royal flushes and straights and stuff like that. It's really more about just finding, you know, multipliers, getting points multipliers, and using those multipliers in a way to get the highest score possible. For instance, there's jokers that will give you, hey, if there's spades, you know, in your hand, you'll get a 2x multiplier. You'll get like a 6x multiplier, something like that. It gives you a score based upon, let's say, I don't know all the point matters, but let's say straights are 50 points. And then there's two different things you can do in terms of a multi, where it's like it'll give you a 15 multi. But then on top of that, you can also get complete multi. So it'd be a 15x multiplier, but then a 2x multiplier on your final score. So it's those things that can escalate exponentially. All of a sudden, a 50-point hand can turn into a 10 million point hand. That's exaggerating, but a 10,000 point hand. And it's about finding those synergies and using power-ups like jokers and celestial cards to build up that deck and keep going, kind of thing.
Yeah, it's one of the games where you really got to jump into, and the barrier for entry is so low because you don't need to know a single thing about poker or cards to just kind of lose yourself in this game. You know, like, there are like certain things in the game, like the run info button that will tell you the current level of your current poker hands, because although a pair is like 10 points or 20 points, you can level up the pair aside from the joker aspect. So you can have jokers who upgrade your multiplier of a pair by tens, if not 20s. And then you have the other cards that actually upgrade just the base level of the pair. So it's like you end up it's just a numbers game at this point, but it's a very fun, easy to get into numbers game. And creating the run isn't about having like the best, like the strongest character or the most OP class. It's really about finding the hand that's going to be your go-to hand, finding the suit that you feel like you want to really go into, because you're going to end up with way more, or sometimes even way less than 52 cards in the deck. And then it's going to be a case of, do you want them all to be hearts, clubs, maybe split them up into spades or whatnot? Like, it's just this is one of those runners that I find it much harder to consistently build a great run. And we talked about this on this podcast where it's hard to do that. I feel more discouraged. Whereas like this is actually that rare thing where it's the opposite. Like where I hardly ever feel like I know I'm going to do well in this run until I'm 4, 8, 12 blinds in. And I'm just like, okay, now I know what cards I'm going to get, what hands I'm going to be dealt with, what now I know what I'm looking for. And I hope I can get the jokers or keep the jokers or replace the jokers that are going to help me achieve the biggest multiplier possible.
Yeah, and that's really what it is that, like you said, of it's a numbers game. And I think, you know, by this point, as you keep playing it, you sort of learn what the game has to do, and you learn where you need to start, where you need to end. Like, and for a while, I don't want to say you'll get beat up, but you'll get to a boss and you'll just get kind of wiped. You know, it's similar to like a Slay the Spire, to where the first time you get up to that boss and it just like destroys you and you're just like, what? What was I supposed to do, kind of thing? And then as you discover more jokers and you discover more, you know, synergies or celestial cards, it becomes a run of just like, okay, I'm on, you know, 6 antes in right now or 6 blinds in right now. These are the jokers I have. Now I need to create a strategy to use these jokers in a way that makes sense. For instance, like a joker can be played in a diamond card suit, gives you +3 multiplier when scored. +10 multiplier if your hand contains 2 pair. Let's look at some of the more, you know, crazier ones. If the first hand of a round is a single 6, destroy it and create a spectral card. So there's a lot of gambles on stuff you can do too, of I'm going to kind of try to you know, of go for gold here. Go for big. There's one that I use a lot called the red card Joker, which is this Joker gains +3 multiplier whenever a booster pack is skipped. And that can be contingent on, or that can be at any time. As soon as you get that Joker card, you can open up packs. And if you skip them, you get a +3 multiplier. So there's an instance to where you might even be able to get 4 booster packs in one round kind of thing. And if you skip all those, all of a sudden that's +12. And you do that 5 times, all of a sudden you have a +100 multiplier on every single hand. So when you can start combining that with 4 other Jokers, you know, like it just creates this, again, it compounds very quickly. And that's the secret to this game, is compounding your Jokers in a way to create a hand or create a strategy that will get you to the end. But then on top of that, where it also becomes more sort of difficult, or where it can kind of keep playing with you, I think it's 4. You get 4 hands every round and 4 discards every round, or is it 5? I don't remember.
I think it's 5.
But then there's also different decks that you can start with. So for instance, the blue deck is you get plus one hand every round. So that obviously makes it easier. But then once you beat it with that hand or that deck, the blue deck also, then you can put a stake on it. And for instance, the stake is a small blind, gives you no reward money. And so there are, 15 different decks. And there's each one of those has its own,
leveled up version.
And so
well,
I don't know how many stakes are per deck, but there's quite a bit. So it's, once you figure out the game, the challenge is then is just going through these stakes and going through these basically contingencies on your deck of get to the end, even though you're going to be hamstrung or handicapped by this, and figure it out. And it creates a very satisfying loop, like you said, of, it's easy to pick up. I wouldn't even say it's hard to master, but it's fun to master, in that you're going to find a synergy or a set of cards that really worked for you. And then eventually that won't work because one of the antis will jack you up, or one of the deck contingencies will sort of nullify that. And then you just sort of keep building on your knowledge of how the thing works. And then you just kind of keep playing. And all of a sudden, before you know it, it's been 60 hours.
Right, exactly. I mean, that's where I really where it kicked in for me was when I got kicked in the butt, actually, because I remember going through the ANSI's and I keep it up with my buddy saying I did this, I beat this, and beat this ANSI. He's like, okay, that's all cool, but wait till you get to this one. I'm like, all right, let me see which one you're talking about. Then it's like the ANSI's literally it goes from 800, 1200, 1600 to a million. Right. I'm like, there's no way I can get a million points in this game. This must be where the game ends. And it's so this must be the end all be all boss. I get it. Okay. So somehow, some way, I get some great jokers out there, some great tarot cards, just to end up beating this $1 million ante. It's okay, great. Let's keep going. And it's Jesus, this is my life now. There's just no getting away from it. And that's when I realized, I'm like, yeah, this is going to be the game of where I just keep on my phone, on my computer at all times.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment, because it's, I think where the magic is too, is obviously being able to pause a run whenever kind of thing. And you don't ever really lose it, because it's basic poker rules, right? Now, you could argue that if you haven't come back in a couple days, you might forget what your strategy was depending on your jokers and stuff like that. And that's not a flaw or anything, but that's for me where it's sometimes I might forget, or, I'm just going to kill this run and start a new run kind of thing. Where I get sort of, I don't want to say I'm just not nearly as, this is a super solid game. For me, it's the fact that you are sort of strained by the poker rules, I guess you could say, or your points are always determined by poker rules in many ways. I feel like I, halfway through a run, I have a strategy and I'm never going to do anything different than that strategy. There's never any late game hey, I'm in the final ante round. Holy crap, I got this Joker. Holy crap, I can now do this XYZ. It's typically a strategy that I'll come up with round 6 out of 12. And I'm like, okay, I've got two pair updated from level 1 to level 8. It can go up to level 10. I've got spades. I put more spades than anything in my deck because I use celestial cards. And now I'm just going to keep doing that and hoping that I get double pairs or two pairs. Like, and that's, right. I'm sure I might be doing something wrong or there's probably other things about it. But that's where I found it for me. Like, once you start going so far, it's kind of luck of the draw at some point. I feel like the strategy gets removed and I'm no longer playing the game. I'm just playing RNG at that point. Like, hopefully I get these things.
You're not wrong. I would agree with that. Yeah. Like it doesn't have that. And that's just by the nature of what the game is. It's a game about cards, you know, like there's no skill based shooter involved, right. If you will.
There's no dodging.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, it's just the nature of the beast in a sense, but you're absolutely right. Like you do want that in a runner, usually that thing where you're like halfway through a run, you can be like, oh, I finally got this thing I was looking for. I can start readjusting the way I play the game now. Where it's like, no, this is, especially like when you get like those tarot cards where it's like, we're going to change more of your cards to a single suit. It's like, okay, that's all I'm doing now. Right. Like, because if I do anything else, it's working against me.
Yeah,
you know. So it's like, I completely agree with that. With that criticism.
Yeah, and it's recognizing what it gives you and being able to adapt. And I guess you could argue that's part of the point. You know, like that's, you need to be able to do that. But it's, and I could be wrong. You know, maybe there's other jokers, and maybe the game will take a turn. Like I've got like 50 hours in it now at this point, I think. I have not discovered all the jokers. There are a set of, you know, rarities for the jokers. There's common, uncommons, rare, I think like hollow, you know, like there are other jokers that you can get, kind of thing, that maybe will do that. And maybe they're exclusive to certain rounds, maybe to certain decks. I don't know. But I'm not going to say like after 50 hours, if I still haven't seen some of them, I don't think the game's going to suddenly, you know, like change and introduce these new mechanics. It's not Inscription, I guess, is what I'm saying. It's not going to.
Like you're right. And like, and to that point, it's like you'll get as much as you want out of this game, and then the fact that you can just kind of put it down and it's not any consequence, I think is a positive. I do have a question though. Like, why did you ever want to skip hands or skip lines rather? Cause I never saw the purpose in, cause you have the option, cause each round you have three blinds, the small, the big and the head, each one with a score higher than the next, the previous rather. You can skip the small or the big blind for like, I think minimum rewards all the time. Did you find yourself skipping blinds at all often?
Let me rephrase it. On the contingency of whatever the stake is. So like the stake for the blue hand or the blue deck is the small blind gives you no reward money. So there is a shop in this game. And so if the small blind doesn't give me any reward money, then like, for instance, if I skip this blind, I might get a rare joker for free after I do the big blind. So to me, that's worth it because I'm not going to get any money anyway. Earlier that you skip it, the more, I want to say there is a part about that I'm with you. Like, I don't quite understand. It's just like, so if I'm just not getting any money for the small blind, why would I not skip it? Like, and so the caveat with that is then you can't go to the store. So the later in the run that I get, if I have $50 I need to spend, or maybe it's like a consistency to where I need to get to the store to open packs to skip them. Like I've had that instance with the red card. I might not skip a blind even though, because let's say the bonus is something that I don't need, kind of thing. So yes, the answer to your question is yes, but it's very contingent on whatever deck I am using. As it being a broad rule, absolutely not. Most of the time I'm playing that blind because I want the money and I want to get to the store. So,
right. Yeah. I mean, yeah, like I guess like the some mechanics in this game, where as simple as this game is, I still feel myself hours upon hours later not truly engaging with all of the pieces of the gameplay for some reason.
Yeah, it kind of comes back to like Slay the Spire, and I was like, why would I ever want to get rid of a card? Like, somebody explain this to me. Like, I can't figure it out, kind of thing. I don't think it's nearly as deep as that. Like, I don't think there's like a magical thing that's just like, this is why you always want to skip the blunt. You know, like there's not a hidden thing that we're just not seeing or not, you know, not putting two and two together. I think it just makes sense in certain scenarios. And so it's sort of right. A blanket sort of option that you have. I could be wrong, you know, like maybe, maybe not, but that's my gut feeling on it, is that for a long time, I never skipped it. I never skipped it because to me, I didn't see a reason to. But as those sort of contingencies and sort of things started coming in, it was like, okay, maybe I should. Now, what I'll also say is, like, skipping blinds is at the start of the game, to me, it actually makes more sense to skip, because those first three hands, you typically don't have enough jokers to really make a difference. And I found as if you get right. out of the first three antes or first three blinds without a set of jokers that make sense, your run can be kind of DOA. And so that's, depending on what the contingencies are or the, you know, the rules are, sometimes I'll skip those first two just so that way I can get whatever the perks are and get to the boss and not waste my time trying to get through the first two blinds, then to just get to the boss, have it have a buff or whatever you want to call it that just completely jacks me up, that I wasted 10 minutes playing the first two one. So like, typically it's a time saver for me than anything, which is probably not a great thing, but also that's part of the strategy, is being able to recognize that, I suppose.
No, that does make sense. Again, like it's just one of those things where I'm just like, I don't quite get this aspect of the game. Just like, but then again, like, I play this game kind of with the mindset of I don't really care, but like in a good way. It's like, thank God, I could play a game where I don't have to. Like, we just talk about Mullet Jack, and it's like, I don't have to be so locked in.
Right,
I could just be doing anything else and just like clicking on cards, like, so that's why I definitely asked the question.
Well, and for me, really, what, like, the thing that clicked for me or that when I started really thinking about it, it came together, is there are certain times where, let's say you're playing two pair, I can still play a fifth card. It's not going to add to the score, it's not going to take away from the score, but what it is going to do is give me another card. And so there's a lot of small things like that that I never thought about. And so once I started thinking about it from that aspect of, like, there are certain times where I just need to get through the deck. Like, I need to get through the deck, but there's other times that I want the deck to be slow. And it just depends on whatever strategy that you're going for, et cetera, et cetera. Those are a lot of the small things that I think are going to be for, like, the people that want to get the 272-hour completion of just, like, I need to know what I'm doing here, and I need to know that this strategy, while in a regular poker scenario, I would never play a quote two pair with another card, because that's not how poker works. You don't play cards that are not part of the combination that makes sense, you know? So that's where the gamification of it comes in. And like you said, like, I just want to play cards, you know, like, like, I just want to click cards and go. You can do that too, but you have to learn some of those small things, or you're never going to get, you know, you're never going to ascend.
Not going to have the big run.
So, and that's where things started clicking for me. I'm just like, okay, I need to think about this less about poker sometimes and more about moving things around. I also, for the longest time, did not know that you can rearrange the jokers. And when I found that out, I was like, oh, that actually makes a lot of sense. Because there was one time, like, I got a joker that was like a 2x multiplier on the entire hand.
Oh, I feel bad for you, sir.
So, I shouldn't say it took like 5 or 6 hours. It wasn't like I was playing and playing, but like,
I mean, That's still long enough to be like, fuck up like a lot of your multipliers, I feel.
For
like.
Sure.
I realized it when I got angry like the first time. It's like, why is this Joker triggering for this Joker? And now I'm actually losing points somehow. Like, this is stupid. I started clicking. I'm like, oh, wait, I can move it.
Yeah,
I'm,
and that was pretty similar. Like, I had a full 2x multiplier rare Joker, and it was like, it was at the start of the chain, and it was just like, God, that really sucks. Like, because in my head, and it makes sense, it was like, oh, this, it's going to do it itself, right? Like, it's going to put the 2x where it makes sense. And then when I saw it wasn't, I was like, well, that's stupid. Like, that's completely RNG based. And then I don't remember how I figured it out, but like, I think it was similar to you, to where like, I just saw like bouncing around. I was like, can I move that? And I clicked, oh, I can move that. Well, shit. And as soon as that happened, it was like, all right, well, next time I get that multiplier, like, duh. Kind of thing. And then also, like, if you want, I'm really dumb in that for like the first hour, I didn't realize that the 1 out of 5 and the 0 out of 2, the top of the screen was listing like how many cards you can have in each one. I never paid attention to the number, and I thought that because some of the Jokers are like they can break or whatever, the glass cards. I thought that was telling me how many turns I had left of some of the Jokers. So for the longest time, I only had 4 Jokers because it does a thing to where it fills the space up. So it makes it look like, you know, pleasing to the eye aesthetically. And so once you get 4, it fills up the entire top box. But it leaves a little bit of space between them. I thought that's just how it was supposed to look. And at one point I was like, wait a minute, can I have a 5th Joker? Because you can sell Jokers at any time, but you can sell them and you can do stuff like that. And it was just like, oh, well, I'm an idiot.
I was actually there with you, I think, the first run or two, I think, because like, because the placement shadow behind it is just one long piece of like shadow. It's not like slots where a card would go into at the top. So I'm just like, oh, okay, then I'm all out of Jokers, or rather, I didn't stop trying to get Jokers. I just focused on getting tarot cards,
right?
Until I got a Joker, but almost by accident, I'm like, oh, wait, oh, great, we're good.
Yep.
that makes sense now.
And that was stuff like that. It's just like, and I don't know, it very well may have told me how many Jokers you can have. It can. So, and like, and on that topic of just like always playing cards and stuff, it does subtly teach you those things, because there's certain bosses where it's like, you have to play 5 cards. Now, that's not saying that you have to play hands that will result in 5 card combinations of like a royal flush, a straight, etc. It's no, you just have to play 5 cards. Like, you have to read it, what it's saying, and you have to be very deliberate about what it's saying. And that's true.
That particular blind screwed me up because I didn't read exactly what the thing was, and I was losing. I'm just like, well, what am I doing wrong? I was like, oh, I'm not writing.
So, and it's some of that stuff again, it might be by design, but there's also, I swear to God, there was one time where There's some of the blinds that are saying that says like you can only play one type of hand this entire round, and I did 2 pair and I put up another 2 pair. It said I can't play this hand, and I was super confused. Like, I don't know if I'm just dumb. I probably am. I was not reading something right, but there was a couple times it was just like, I feel like this is not being truthful. Like, this is lying to me. Like, something is just not right. But yeah, there's a lot of stuff like that where it's getting just, you just have to pay attention. And think about combinations that you won't ever. And this is what I have not done the thing where I did with Slay the Spire or a couple of the other runs where it's like, I'm gonna go online and watch somebody that has mastered this game and figured it out. And like, what am I missing here? Like, small thing am I missing that is just like, oh geez, I didn't even think about that. Like, ah, God dang it, kind of thing. I'll probably do that eventually, but that also kind of takes some of the magic out of it. So.
And also it's not a game you need to do it with, right? Either, because like with the Slay the Spire, this very obvious boss character that you need to fight, you know, there's a very obvious like thing you need to figure out, where it's like, this is like Candy Crush for real gamers.
Yeah, that's
like you're just playing some cards, hanging out, nothing big here, move along.
Candy Crush for real gamers. That's a great title for this episode. So. But yeah, Balatro. I think it's fair to say, like, we've talked about it enough that it's, check it out. Like, chances are you probably have. If for some reason you haven't, this is like a Vampire Survivors level. Just check it out. It'll click with you. It might not click with you to the point where you want to put 300 hours into it, but it might. It also might. So check it out for that reason. For me, like I said, like I am not, this is an amazing game. It deserves its Game of the Year nominations, but people that are saying like, it's the best runner since Vampire Survivors. It's the best runner since Hades. I'm just like, don't know if I'm with you on that.
Did this come out after Vampire Survivors?
Yeah. This came.
So it is the best runner since Vampire Survivors. Since that one, it's not. I don't think they're saying this is better than.
I mean, I would say Death Must Die is a better game than this.
I would agree with that, but yeah, no, I would agree with that.
Granted, less people have heard about Death Must Die, so like I didn't hear about it until you said something. So like, if I'm not even hearing about it,
It's a good piece of business, guys. If it's not on Game Pass, but the day it does,
it's getting better. Like that game,
is it really? It's got some updates.
A lot of updates. Like that game has potential to be like when that game hits 1.0. Like I am purposely sort of just like keeping my distance from it a little bit. Like I'm checking in on it. It's like when this game hits 1.0, I might lose part of my life for a little while, kind of thing. So yikes, but yeah. All right, Balatro, play it. Have some fun with it. When it comes to the future of this show, are you checking out Adam Fall, sir?
I guess. I mean,
I'm very curious about it.
It's another Skyrim like. So yeah, sure.
I'm very very curious about it. I'm curious enough that like I want to check it out. Whether or not it clicks, I'm not sure. Kind of thing. So we're kind of at that point to where there's not a lot jumping at us kind of thing. We're going to check out some stuff here. I will admit to you, I tried playing Rogue Trader.
yeah, you know, that is not your thing, brother.
I tried. I tried very hard.
Rogue Trader is dang near. Wait, hold on. Co-op action roguelike?
What?
Oh, it's a game preview. Never mind.
33.
Yeah. Yeah. Rogue Trader is low key. A top 20 game of the year, like top 10, top 15 game of the year. It is super lore heavy. The gameplay is phenomenal. It is a turn-based RPG, and if you're not into those, like this is all of that. Like this is very much one of, like, again, Warhammer fans, if I'm missing something, please let me know, because I am knee deep into this Warhammer lore right now with this one particular game. Like it's like Star Trek but with real things going on. Like it's not like kidsy stuff. This is a good piece of business. Like this will never be on the show, so I'm just gonna say honorable mention. Play that Warhammer.
Maybe because like that's one that I know you've put a lot of time into, and I'm sure there's some stuff that I put into that you won't play. So maybe we need to do a dual episode at some point. But that was just me being like, I tried. And honestly, really, what it is for me is I'm at a current time in my life where my brain just does not want to read stuff. And that game is a book. Like it is by far one of the heaviest in terms of text of any CRPG I've ever played. Especially front loaded. Like when you, I have not played through all of Baldur's Gate 3, but like the combination of like lore / choices and combat, I'm actually terrible at these games. However, with Baldur's Gate 3, the mixture of how much I'm in combat versus doing stuff in the world is at a good pace for me. Whereas Rogue Trader is like, bro, I'm going to read a book for an hour and I'll be lucky if I get a battle. Just one.
No, like, no. You're having a conversation for about 15 minutes.
And it's like, bro,
we have to get through the Rogue Trader's backstory. We have to get through the world setup, and I get it. Like you're not wrong at any point. Like, if anyone's played this game, said it's too much of that, like you're absolutely in your right to believe that because you're not wrong. However, this lore, like it did grab me.
There you go. So, Just not gonna happen for me. So maybe we'll do a dual episode. I have checked out the Aliens: Dark Descent. Have you seen that at all?
Is that a real thing?
It is a it's probably the antithesis in terms of Rogue Trader, but it is an isometric sort of strategy game. But it's far more weighted towards like action and small groups and stuff like that. So maybe we'll do a dual episode on that or something like that, because at least they'll be sort of similar. Similar ilk, I guess you could say, similar style games. But yeah, so, but really, I say all this is because I think April is next month. And April, we have both Clair Obscur, Expedition 33, and South of Midnight, which are two very large games for Microsoft in terms of Game Pass. One's on the 8th, one's on the 24th. We will be checking out both of those, I think, for sure. Both of us are extremely curious about Expedition 33. Like, I hope this isn't another Flintlock situation, but God, I want that game to be good. Like, I really want that game to be good. So,
yeah, I'm crossing my fingers. It looks like a great vertical slice. I'm just hoping like the whole game is that quality.
We will see. And there'll be other stuff coming out then too. So when it comes to the future, maybe we'll talk about Atomfall next. And Bronson and I are still trying to get like one episode a month. And I think we're going to talk about the original Diablo next. We were going to do Watch Dogs, but I don't know if we'll ever get that far just due to the length of the game. So, but all right, that's going to do this episode of Game Pass or Pass. We'll see you next time with maybe Atomfall.
Good day, sirs.